I'm wrestling, do not weep for me. Celebrate what I am. Celebrate what I have been. Celebrate what I represent. And celebrate the many ways I have impacted your life. I will survive this test as I have survived others. I am forever etched into the very fiber of all mankind. The world needs me. Time is on my side. History guarantees me. I am wrestling. Do not wait for me.
What's up, everybody? You're listening to episode number 87 of the T. Rowan Funky Show, brought to you, as always, by Defend Soap, Defend What You Have Built, and Dollarama Mats. Tommy, what's going on, man?
Nothing much, my brother. Just enjoying another day in paradise.
Well,
like
are you sad about the Indians, though?
I'm sad about the Indians. Stayed up till midnight with my kids. I let them stay up on a school night.
Dang, you let your kids actually made it to midnight on a school night?
School night, I let them do it, man. I let them do it. Big deal in Ohio. And, you know, I'm not a super huge, you know, baseball or even Indians fan. But, you know, when something big like that's going on in your state, you can't help but gravitate towards it. And my kids, you know, what I didn't expect is my kids got really into it from talking about it at school. So we almost actually went to the game. I almost bought some bleacher seats. And I guess I'm glad we didn't, because we would have got home at 2 a.m. They would have had an even rougher day at school. But, yeah, it's tough, man. They blew it, you know. A great team, great season, but, you know, when you're up 2-0 and you lose, there's only one way to word that one, and you blew it.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, and so for our listeners, we are going to have our fourth Big Ten head coach on in a row. Brandon Egan is going to join us in about 20 minutes. But Tommy and I wanted to hop on before because there was actually some wrestling going on. So it's been, a month or more than a month since any wrestling's really happened.
It's been a while. We were in a little bit of a drought, and we finally got some good action to talk about, so I'm pumped up about it.
So let's start with U23s. And, you know, really there's not a huge amount of crazy matches, but I think the one that caught everyone's eye and the one that caught my eye was Fix versus Tomasello, which obviously didn't turn out in Tomasello's favor, so I know you're going to be pretty salty. But, man, I think this says a lot about Dayton Fix, because not only did he beat Nathan Tomasello twice, but he put up a decent amount of points. I want to say he won 8-7 and 7-5, I think it was. And Tomasello doesn't get scored on that much. I mean, almost never.
Yeah. No, it was disturbing as an Ohio State fan to watch. Now, in the same breath, it wasn't overly surprising. We all knew Dayton Fix. You know, we knew he was that good, but it's like this is the first time, you know, it's a reality at a level other than high school, if that makes sense. So it's like we kind of knew it in the back of our minds. I think everybody did. But when he actually just went out there and beat Tomasello, I wouldn't say handily, but decidedly, you know, he fair and square won both matches. You know, it really says a lot, because Nathan Tomasello is not just a top-ranked guy in the weight class. You know, he's built a track record the past 3 or 4 years that is very, very impressive. He's already a national team member at USA Wrestling. So, you know, again, it's funny that it just speaks to how good Dayton Fix is, that I wouldn't say that it was surprising, but it was revealing. It made what everyone kind of thought in the back of their mind, now it's in the front. And I mean, just kudos to him.
I was actually some of my kids, the AWA kids, do strength and conditioning just down the way, and I needed to get a workout in Saturday, so I went up there and hopped in there with them to make sure they were going hard enough, and we were stretching out afterwards. And they said something like, I don't know how it came up, Gilman versus Fix came up. And I said, guys, I don't know if he's going to beat Fix. Can go with Gilman. There is no doubt in my mind. You know, it would be a close match. And they all thought I was crazy. They're not admitting it now. I said, but we'll find out tomorrow, because Gilman Tomasello is always a one takedown match. I mean, it's always right there. And so, you know, when Fix goes out and beats, and I want to say maybe scored more points on Tomasello than Gilman ever has. And so I'm eagerly looking forward to next spring when we get to see Fix versus Gilman, and then, you know, I don't know, throw Spencer Lee in that mix too. I think he's that good.
So this result, Ben, prompted you and I via text, and we haven't talked about it, but we've texted about it. It would be very fun, and I think we should do this, not today, but on another episode. You and I should predict the 2020 Olympic team way far in advance, like in the next few weeks. And then archive that, because it really takes a lot of speculation to pick an Olympic team greater than 2 years out.
Yeah,
if you have guys
sure.
like Fix coming on the scene, Gable Steveson coming on the scene, you know, it sounds kind of silly to say right now, but Mark Hall is going to be in a dogfight with Jordan Burroughs in 2020. Now, 100%. Am I saying he's going to beat him?
Or is he going to grow grow out of that weight class too. I mean,
he's got all these dynamics.
Yeah.
Then you've got today's guys. You've got today's guys. Kyle Snyder is a bad example, but you got today's guys
example.
Like Jordan Burroughs, who is the guy. Is he going to be able to hold on to that level of competition until 2020? So I think it'd be fun, and we should do it. Nobody does it this far out. And we're going to have some names in there that's going to blow people's minds.
I guess
I
can't recall. And, did UWW state, I know obviously they're going to 10 weight classes starting January 1st, but did they in fact say that the 2020 Olympic weights will be the exact same as 2016? Did they say that definitively?
Well, I did not hear otherwise, Ben, which makes me feel like it's going to stay the same, but we should validate that before we make these predictions.
Yeah. We definitely should.
Anyway,
that's going to make a difference. Like, can Dayton Fix hold 125? I mean, he's only 19. There's definitely not out of the question he's going to hit a growth spurt, right?
And those new weigh-in rules will make it interesting, obviously. So yeah, there's a lot to consider.
Yeah, and they're doing hour weigh-ins, so that's going to play a factor, and multiple day weigh-ins. So that plays a huge factor. You know, a guy like Mark Hall said he can't.
I actually think Ben, that really the only guy that you and I both, you know, would really bet a lot of money on to make the team in 2020 would be Kyle Snyder. You know, the other five.
Well, it depends on what odds you're giving me. If you said 10-1 on Gable Steveson making the team, I'm taking that bet, right?
I'm talking about straight. I mean, it's going to be hard to put a finger on the other five.
Yeah, that'll be fun. I'm going to look forward. I'm going to have to do my research on that discussion. I'm going to have to call these guys up, say, what are you weighing right now? Are you going to make that weight class? You know, is Jaden Cox going to be able to hold 189 for another 3 years? I'm going to start doing my serious due diligence.
Yeah. Then you got Stieber's probably going to go up. You know,
yeah.
Will Pico make a return? You know, all those types
Stieber,
of things.
Like,
you know,
I liked when they said, I don't know when it was, Tommy, we heard that the possibility was that none of the 10 non-Olympic year weight classes would be the Olympic weight classes, because it kind of makes some of them irrelevant, right? So it's like, okay, if Stieber is at, what's the new weight class, 61 or whatever it is? Yeah, 61.
Right.
Like, does he wait till 2020 to go up and grow into 65, or does he start doing it today, right?
No, I think I've told him as much. It just my advice, because I went to 211 in 2012 only.
Yeah,
and
I remember that.
If I could do it over again, I would have went down the prior year to the Olympic year, because it took so much time to adjust. And I think the same can be said for going up.
Yeah,
you know, if you really want to settle in, it's a 2 year adventure to me, not a 1 year adventure. If I could do it over again, I would have went down to 211, taken some bad beats, had some tough weight cuts, you know, stabilized everything, and then gone into the Olympic year with everything dialed in.
Yeah, and, you know, I feel the same way, because obviously 2007 was the first time I ever made 74 kilograms.
Uh-huh.
And I still remember it. First time I ever made it was the U.S. Open. I was a 7 seed. I won my first match. I beat Tyrone Lewis pretty handily in my second match. I had a great first period against Joe Heskett. And, man, I hit this wall, right? I hit this wall that I hadn't felt before. And my legs stopped working, and it was just no good, because I had not made that weight class in 6-7 years. I mean, it had been a long time since I'd been that low. So, yeah, definitely, I mean, to your point of going down early.
And Ben, you and I are both talking about the cutting, but I think the same can be said for going up. And I've gone up. I went up from 211 in 05 to heavyweight in 06. And I, you know, I gained the weight. It's not the weight, the pounds came on. I was a heavyweight, right? But like getting that, you know, extra level of girth and strength and muscle, girth. It could be a difference of 3 or 4 pounds, but you just get more solid. Yeah. I think that takes a while too.
Definitely. So the other result that was interesting was Marsteller and Imar went at it again. And what was really funny about this weight class was they were the only two that showed up. I mean, other weight classes had up to 20 people in it. And so I don't know if people saw Imar and Marsteller and said, screw it, I'm going to go to a different weight class. Or what the deal was. But they're the only two people
I think it just speaks to what we already know, and it's obvious, just the emphasis on the college season.
But other weight classes weren't that small, Tommy.
They were all light, though, Ben.
They were light.
But
not two.
You know, compared to what was at stake. Yeah. Oh, I agree. That was a little goofy.
Yeah. So, but that, man, those are fun matches. I watched them. I think they wrestled in the University World Team Trials Finals. Man,
I'm excited. I'm excited for Marsteller at Lockhaven this year.
Yeah, he could do really, really well, I feel like. But who knows? He could also pull a bonehead move and never wrestle a match. So we just don't know yet.
Either is possible.
Either is definitely possible. So we got short time. I'm kind of rushed. I feel like I'm rushing us through this. But, you know, we got Brandon Egan coming on, so we want to give him plenty of time to say what he's got to say. The other awesome event for the weekend was the Who's Number One. It's one of my favorite events every year. They do a really good job with it.
Absolutely.
They do get a lot of the number ones versus the number twos. And so, man, so many good matches. I guess let's go with a couple. What was your favorite one?
My favorite one to watch was Malik Heinzelman versus McHenry.
Okay.
Both guys, very good. I liked McHenry's low single at the end. Heinzelman, to me, he competed. You know, he could have won the match. I know he had a good body lock and what have you, but as a guy that signed with Ohio State, not to allude to that, but I guess I thought he was going to get beat a lot worse by a guy like McHenry, and he hung in there and wrestled well. But I thought both guys, if those guys can put on the pounds, both of those guys have the skills to pay the bills. So I was entertained the most by that match.
Yeah, that was an awesome match. So do you believe the rumor that McHenry weighed in? I'm sorry. That McHenry weighed in at 105 pounds? Because that's what they were saying. And if that is true, that makes it so much more impressive.
That makes it so much more impressive, and I also don't believe it.
You don't believe it?
He's a junior, right?
Junior.
I don't believe it. Do you know any 105-pound juniors? Have you ever met one?
I don't know. I mean, well, that would be exceptionally small. But, you know,
T.J. Hill's one.
Yeah, T.J. Hill is tiny. I remember that.
And he didn't even weigh 105. I bet he weighed more, you know?
Yeah, I definitely think he weighed more than that. And I think there's a lot of, you know, interesting angles to take there. I mean, one would be, is he going to ever even be big enough for 125 in college, right? There's that.
Or international.
International is the smallest of 125 now also, so there's that. And then there's but Tommy, he gave up 13 pounds, if this is true, and possibly more if Heinzelman was cut into 118, which is the weight class. I mean, that's like, I was thinking about, that's like a 170-pounder percentage-wise wrestling roughly 195. Like, that's
no, if it's true, it's unbelievably impressive, and it's also like, man, is McHenry ever going to be big enough to wrestle grown men at 125?
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was thinking. So who knows? You know, he may hit his growth spurt coming up here. Definitely not beyond the realm of possibilities that hits a growth spurt. He's only 17, so
right,
17 or 18 or 19.
You're right. That's true.
So
that's true.
Yeah, that match obviously started it off really well. I really like the McKee versus, not Patrick Glory, the other New Jersey, Robert Howard. McKee versus Robert Howard.
That was good.
That was fun. I thought it was fun.
Good, yeah, of course. You liked all the scrambles.
Yeah, well, then we talk about Glory. We can talk about Glory Teasdale also, which was, I got some issues with that match. But McKee versus Howard, it was kind of cool because McKee was a late minute last minute replacement, and
yep.
he had won Fargo this summer. And you know, I know he was annoyed that I think he was still ranked number 5 or 6, and they just said he had, you know, he didn't prove it or whatever. So it was really cool to see him to get to prove that he was the number one guy. And I, you know, I think you'd kind of say at that weight class now he is the across the board number one.
Oh yeah, I mean you got to give it to him. I liked the match. I thought that there was good to the point of, you know, how you and I kind of, I bag on scrambling and you defend scrambling. I thought that was what you and David Terra allude to, which is, you know, an extension of wrestling. That was just guys just not giving up.
Well, so then how do you feel? How did you feel about Teasdale Glory, where they went to the same scramble over and over and over and over?
I felt the way that I feel about scrambling.
Yeah.
Well,
so
let
me ask you this then, Tommy. This is a good question because this is like the perfect example. So every single time it felt like Glory was like, okay, take my ankle. And Teasdale was like, okay, I will. And then Glory would go to a scramble. He would get a slight upper hand. And then Teasdale would lock down on the ankle. And then they would have a stalemate. I mean, that happened, what, we're talking 8 times in a row or something? 9 times in a row?
Yeah.
So
yes.
Who is it on?
It's on Teasdale.
Okay.
It's on Teasdale because Glory is not promoting the stalemate. He's encouraging and baiting an action, but he's not saying I want to go to a stalemate.
Yes. Yeah, he's trying to finish that position. I mean, he is. So, you know, the one thing that frustrated me, cuz I think if there's one thing that frustrates me more than anything, it's poor strategy.
Right.
And man, if you're Teasdale and you shoot 7 times and you've ended up in the same bad scramble, you've been forced to hang on to the ankle for a stalemate, why are you going to shoot the 8th time or the 9th time or the 10th? I mean, why? Why don't you change it up? Why don't you try to snap him down? Why don't you try
a drag, double,
something else?
But do you think that you were thinking, and you might have been because you were obviously pretty good, but not every high school kid really actually even thinks with an applied strategy. I can tell you that I was a blue chip recruit, and I never really thought of what point I was in the match,
really?
Where it was at. No.
What about
I tried
the same thing 7 times and it didn't turn out well? I'm not going to do it 8. What about that? And I like Gavin Teasdale. I'm a fan, so that's.
I'm with you. No, I mean, I can't say that. You know, I haven't done that. All I know is that here was my strategy in high school, Ben.
Yeah.
Shake hands and let it rip. Hopefully I have more points at the end. And I actually maintain that same philosophy overall, and I know you did too, but you apply, you know, you start using your brain as you get older in terms of, like, what to do and how to do it and what works and what doesn't work and stuff like that.
Yeah. So the most mad I've ever been coaching. You want to hear about it, Tommy? And I'm not going to out the kid.
I do.
If he listens to this, he'll know who I'm talking about. But we were at UWW Nationals, and he was on the younger end. He was wrestling a good kid, but he shoots head inside single. He gets dumped. And so in the first period, shoots head inside single, gets dumped 4 times. So he's down 8-0 coming to the break, right? And I'm like, dude, you shot 4 head inside singles. You got dumped 4 times. I said, dude, I don't care what you do in the second period, but if you shoot a head inside single to your knees, you're running home. He freaking went out, head inside single, dumped to his back, 10-0. I didn't even know what to say. I'm like, dude, you could have lost. You could have got pinned. You could have done anything.
I
said,
to see you mad, man. I don't think I've ever.
I said, listen, man. I asked you not to do one thing, and that was shoot a head inside single to your knees. That was it. I didn't know what to do. And then he went and found a ride home with
before we get Eggum on the phone. There's one match that, you know.
Oh, shoot. Tommy, I don't think I gave him the number to call into. So he can't even call us.
Well,
hold on.
A problem.
I'm going to text him right now.
All right.
Okay, so go ahead and tell the story.
Anyways, the Sasso Arulona pin.
Oh,
especially
that was
good. Especially when you know the background from Fargo, the freaking just absolutely nasty. I don't even know what you call it, where you put the head in between the legs and rotate over on parterre that won the match for Art Alona and Fargo. And just knowing the history between those two guys, And Sasso being in his, you know, basically his backyard.
Yep.
That was cool. But, you know, the match wasn't as exciting to me as others, but the finish was, you know, awesome.
No, that was a fantastic, and it was cool that it was the last match of the duel, obviously, so it was a fantastic finish.
Yep.
Yeah, so I guess the one thing that bothers me most is poor strategy. You know, if someone keeps doing something that's not working and thinking that the same thing's going to happen. Okay, I just texted Brandon. He's going to call in now, so I guess we should be expecting him any second. Let me see. Who else? I'm trying to find. Oh, here we go, 2017. I'm seeing if there's freaking any matches. I was Teamer Jacory Teamer versus Mitch Moore. I love that step behind Peterson that he hit. That was fantastic.
Yep, absolutely. Right.
Here we go. Brandon's calling in. Let me.
Your brother Chris Farr is a senior this year, so he's going to stick around, help for at least a year here, and maybe maybe look at training down the road. So
that's great.
Yeah.
Well, cool. Yeah, so I did my research while you were talking there, Brandon, and I can say this, but Patrick McKee is, in fact, committed to the University of Minnesota, did so in August. So I guess congratulations on that, despite the fact that you can't comment. So you can obviously comment on just general things going on. You know, I think it's fantastic that Minnesota has, you've had a few junior and cadet world medalists lately. And, I think a lot of that has to do with the influence of the Pinnacle Wrestling School, which is three Gopher alums, Jacob Deitchler, Brandon Paulson, and Jared Lawrence. You know, what do you feel like the effect of them on, the general Minnesota community, and then hopefully, some effect on the University of Minnesota?
You know, those guys are all three alumni here at the U of M. They're great guys, and they're, as you mentioned, they're doing just a great job out there in Pinnacle. So we're excited to have them on board and helping with our senior level athletes. Paulson's done a lot with the Greco team. He also helps with our freestyle guys because he's around. Obviously, they got their hands full with Pinnacle, but Jared Lawrence is full time. Freestyle coach, RTC coach for our guys, and helps out.
Oh, he is?
And that's great for us, you know. Yeah, so he helps out with our senior level guys. Dustin Slater's stepping in and taking more and more of that role, going to continue to help in that manner, and also travel. You know, that's obviously important just in recruiting. But, you know, looking at that, we have a great relationship with those guys. It's a no-brainer. You know, it's great to have a guy like Jared who is exceptional in technique, but also he has strong relationships with some of these guys that are some of the best kids coming out of our state. So this is it's a win-win for us, and we love having somebody that's been through the program that's able to understand, you know, our culture and the things we are committed to, and to give us the best resources and advice on the kids that are coming through his program. So
for sure. So you got to, I mean, speaking of recruiting, you have a huge freshman class. You know what? Dang it, Tommy. I wish, Brandon, that we could discuss with you Gable Stevenson and Tommy, who's the other guy that we love there? What's his name that we love him? What's his name?
Kirk Livett.
Kirk Livett. Yeah.
He can't come and...
We love them, Brandon. You're a lucky guy.
Yeah, I'm not able to. It's unfortunate. I'm not able to comment on those, and it's almost I feel like tripping trying to think about how you can comment about those things.
Don't worry
so
about
I'm really
it.
Careful in that well, sense, but I hear you.
Tommy and I will comment. You are lucky because those guys are both freaking amateurs.
Well, we can't talk about – Ben and I can talk about what we think of Gable, but you can't. But anyways, we're excited for you. We think he's by far and away the best recruit in America, and we also think that he's a threat in Tokyo, so I can't imagine what he's going to be like at the NCAA level. But at any rate, Brandon, what I wanted to say is just take a step back here, because we haven't had you on the show, I don't think ever, and obviously you took over at the U of M. You went to school there, wrestled there, competed there, coached there. You took over in somewhat of a tumultuous time for the program where, you know, there was a lot of I guess issues to deal with as you transitioned into the head coach. It wasn't like it was passed off in perfectly good order. You had to overcome a lot of things externally and potentially internally. And Ben and I last year, when we talked about Coach of the Year, obviously we brought up a lot of folks. You were one of the names that we brought up. We thought you did an outstanding job of just continuing the trend of great tradition that Minnesota's always produced. But can you kind of comment for us if it was a tough transition for you, given the things, the factors that you had to deal with, or was it more, you know, externally it looked like you know there was a lot to overcome, but internally things were smooth sailing and you know it was fine.
Yeah, I'd say you know, probably the hardest thing about it that time was just the uncertainty, you know, for
right.
our staff, you know, like where things were even moving and, you know, for our, in our direction, just, you know, from a family standpoint and you know, where the future holds, that was tough. You know, the same thing of, you know, for the guys, them being unsure, they're comfortable with our coaching staff and they were wondering, you know, where's this moving? So that was probably the hardest thing, was just the uncertainty of the future. Probably the thing, some of the things that made it, you know, I think the transition the easiest were the fact that our staff had been together for an extremely long time. Luke Becker, you know, a great wrestler, four-time All-American national champ. Dustin Slater, you know, a national champ, world team member, three-time
right.
All-American. Zach Sanders, all those guys have been around the program, so they're phenomenal coaches, but they've been here long enough to know, you know, the ins and outs of what we do here. And we were fortunate to spend a lot of time under a great coach, Jay Robinson. And that guy has taught us a lot, and he's really been a mentor. He recruited all of us. So those
right.
things were, you know, things that I think were very helpful to us. You know, he allowed us to do a lot of those things as coaches and was a great leader in that sense. So I thought made the transition from that end very well. The biggest part of our job as coaches was to make sure that the guys on the team kept their focus, you know, and
right.
focused on the future and the positive things and moving forward. And that's what they did. And that's the reason why we had a great year. And to be honest, it was our best year academically in the history of our program. So
wow.
last year, amidst all the
that's
things
cool.
that were going on from a wrestling standpoint, the guys far outshot expectations by, I guess, the public. We believed and knew that we could do some great things. But then academically, they did a great job. And these are great kids. So we're excited. It's been, there's been a lot of transition there, but it's been, we're really excited
yeah,
about the way
course.
Things are moving. And, you know, going beyond that, just, I guess, things that you guys may know or may not, everyone's talking about this Athletes Village, which is like a $200 million project that's being built right here on top of our athletic facility. And it's awesome for all athletes, especially like where it's going to contribute to like wrestlers in particular. What we're talking about, our guys are going to have for the first time ever a training table, this, you know, high level nutrition
oh, wow.
center for cafeteria for our guys that are right here. It's built inside our facility. We're getting brand new academic space, like tutor space, like the, you know, very important things for why a lot of kids, you know, need to be coming here and getting a degree. We're going to have four times the space we've had academically. There's a leadership
wow.
development center.
When's that opening, Brandon?
Seven.
Yeah, when's so all this late, opening up?
Late January.
Oh,
late
this
January,
year.
Mid-January
wow.
is when it's going to, this year. And so, yeah, there's, you know, some of the things that we, you know, that are important here, I think, as we move forward, that's something, you know, that's really important in recruiting. And it's not like,
of course.
You have to have all those things to be great, but in today's world, it is what it is. Kids are looking at facilities, and it's something they're, everything else being equal, they're making a decision on.
Yep.
Now, when this happens
right.
in January, when they move into this facility, in this facility is also a brand new men's and women's basketball practice facility, weight room, all this, and football has all new facilities that are being built. So they move out of those positions. It opens up a lot of room for the rest of the department to expand, and wrestling will start. I met with architects yesterday, and we haven't talked much about this, but yesterday I met with architects for the new wrestling room, which
nice.
Is going in what was men's basketball practice facility. We're going to have offices right now, and this could change a little bit, but right now we had donors that came in. We had donation of $2.6 million
wow.
that was given for this renovation.
Wow.
And we're going to build offices that overlook this wrestling room. It's going to be phenomenal. We got an extra 1,000 space of cardio training facility right outside our doors in the Olympic-sized weight room that our guys will be able to use. It's right around the corner to the main entrance now to our window to our athletic department and
right.
nutrition center. So it's pretty awesome because it's really the thing that I see that makes it different is that it is a one-stop shop. Everything is underneath this roof. You come in and it's, you know, it gets cold in Minnesota.
It's all there.
So you come in and it's cold. You're walking around in tank top and shorts and flip-flops in the wintertime and going with your tutors, massage therapists, sports psychologists, weight training, coaches, wrestling room, grabbing lunch. It's all in one spot. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. Tommy, I think, besides Storniolo, Ohio State is building a new wrestling room, and Michigan is also. So that's a trend across the Big Ten, apparently. But it sounds like you guys are not only getting a new wrestling room, but like you're getting new freaking everything.
Yeah, and we're going to get a new locker room too. That's moving. They didn't go on the plans on that, but they talked about possibly meeting in a week and talking about that, and that'll be a second phase that we're going to have to continue to work this year to make sure that we generate, you know, our funds and look forward to helping with that project. But we're going to expand our locker room so that we'll have a team room in there and locker room and all the amenities that go with that. So we're excited. So it's moving, and it's an exciting time here. Just continuing to try to have a good season here and keep guys ready and it's been a
what's funny, Brandon, is my background in wrestling. When I got to college in the fall of 1999, I feel like that Minnesota was already good. You were already at that time, I think, a junior or senior. So Minnesota
didn't they win
was
the national
running
title that
and
year?
Humming. No, they didn't.
We took second in 2000.
Oh,
That was when Lesnar, my senior year, Lesnar was there. Tim Hartung was 99, I should say. But Lawrence, Becker, Vega, Erickson, there's a lot of really good guys. In 2001 is when we won our first national title, and that was the year that they had 10 All-Americans. No champs, 10 All-Americans, and that was pretty unique.
And that was the point I was getting to. That was actually my freshman year. But what I was getting to is I was on the junior world team with three of Minnesota guys, Damian Hahn, Jared Lawrence, Leroy Vega. And from that experience moving forward, I've always been, at the time, I was always jealous of the culture and the buy-in that was at Minnesota at that time. And to me, it's not a coincidence that they were able to rattle off a few titles. I think three titles in like seven or eight year span. But you know, has it been hard to maintain that tight-knit culture that Minnesota had, you know, still has, but have you been able to kind of maintain that tight-knit culture where everybody's pretty cohesive and pretty much thinking the same thoughts at the same time? Because I think, you know, one thing that's always been impressive with schools like Minnesota, you know, Penn State now, kind of Ohio State now, you know, even Iowa, who Ben and I don't like to talk about too often, but there's been a consistent mindset. There's been a consistent across every guy on the team. Is that something that you strive to have as a coach? Does that still exist in the program?
100%. It is important, no doubt about it. And all great teams have that. And we're constantly looking for kids that fit into our culture and, you know, the things that are important to us, you know. The work ethic and the family environment, those things are important, being honest, helping others. And these are great guys. So on the recruiting trail, you know, those are the things that we're constantly, you know, asking about and checking and seeing if these kids are committed to academics and athletics. And we're excited with this group that we have coming in here this upcoming season. We'll be excited about those kids. They're not only great wrestlers, but like we said, we're looking for kids that are just great people, and that's important. I want to treat these kids the same way I felt like as you mentioned, the experience I had as a student-athlete here at the University of Minnesota. I was very appreciative of everything I received in my time here, and I want to make sure that you provide that same experience. And as a coach, I think, you know, I think you're remembered more, not just for your wins and losses, but the impact that you have on their lives. You know, and I think that's important. And so we're here to win and be successful, but we want to do it in the right way. And to your point, continue to get kids that fit the culture that we want to have here in our program. And we got good kids, so we're excited the way things are moving. And we're looking forward to the season starting here. And yeah, you look at our lineup. I don't know if you guys had a chance to.
That's what I was just going to bring up. You really filled in some of the weaker spots where we get a few transfers in there, and then you know, a couple freshmen coming up. Owen Webster, you know, a guy who I don't even know, I'm not sure what the backstory is, but he ended up at Augsburg for a year and did really well. But obviously it was Division I caliber. And then you got Steve Blees from University of Northern Illinois, two guys that fill in spots that you know, they should be, if they're not ranked, they should be ranked pretty quick off the bat.
Yeah, both are great guys. And as you mentioned, those are two of our guys that transferred in. Webster will be at 84, and Blythe is looking to go 149. And so it's exciting to get guys that can step right into a lineup and do really well. And both those guys have looked great early here in the fall, and they're hardworking. And so it's exciting. It was a nice move. You know, we had the ability with Parr graduate, and Bobby moves up to 97, which is a weight that he's more comfortable at. And I think it's just the way that – I think is a better fit for him overall. So, if you look at our first six weights, you know, it should be a pretty tough team. We got two All-Americans and we got four other potential guys that were all blood ground guys.
Yeah.
So they're right in the hunt there to do some great things. And then you got Farr at 74 who did qualify at the NCAAs, and Webster, as you mentioned. And so, kind of moving up and down the lineup, and then new to the lineup will be Riley Streifel at heavyweight that'll be in. So it's exciting. We know we got a ton of work to do with those guys, but they're tough kids and they're doing a good job. So we're looking forward. We typically start our first tournament at South Dakota State, their Daktronics Open, and we use that as our wrestle offs. We'll have an open practice where our fans come and watch, but we use that first open as our wrestle off. So a few of those weights, we got guys that'll be looking to battle for a spot, but that'll say a lot about what our starting lineup will be.
Yeah, with Mitch McKee, what's it going to take for him to make that jump? Because obviously he wrestled as a true freshman. He took some lumps, but it was to all good guys. I mean, the Big Ten at 133 last year was insane. You had Michik, Tomasello, Clark, et cetera, et cetera. So he took a lot of losses, but he was round of 12 at NCAAs. You know, what's it going to take for him to make that jump in folk style? Because he always has been kind of I don't want to say predominantly freestyle, but maybe a better freestyler than a folk styler.
Yeah. Like you said, he ran into an onslaught of just tough guys in the Big Ten, and he was competitive with most of those guys. One thing he's done a better job at is weights in a lot better spot. He came in after his senior year. He was pretty big, and not that he isn't stronger today than he was then, but I think he's in a better spot from that perspective. Wrestling-wise, he's aggressive. He does a lot of great things. He's really strong on the mat. But he put himself in some bad positions last year. If you had a chance to watch some matches that were really close, and did some things that are maybe unnecessary. So just tightening up some of it, you know, from shooting from too far away and doing some things that were just young mistakes, I think, that any freshman would make.
Yeah, Ben and I have talked about this. It's just when you're that dominant at the previous level, you know, you don't pay for your sins quite as much, so to speak. And it seems like when I watch him, because, I mean, he's obviously very good and proven that since then in the off season. But it just seems like he hadn't paid the price for some of those, you know, I guess sloppy is probably a word you'd use, and kind of took some lumps for it. So you think he's cleaned that up, cleaned those aspects up? Because it's not about getting better to some extent with when I watch McKee. It's not about he needs to be better at something. He just needs to have cleaner matches, make better choices, so on and so forth.
Exactly. I couldn't have said it any better. That's exactly the way we're looking at it. He looks great right now in the room. I mean, he's wrestling really well. He's doing great. Another guy that sticks out that I think just in another very tough weight class, 141, Tommy Thorne. Boy, he's battling there. He gets a chance to wrestle with some of the best guys in the country around him, even – you know, some of our senior level guys that he's wrestling every day with, whether it's Dylan Ness and Jason Ness, or, you know, any of these guys in that lineup. He's just got so many good partners, but he looks great. We expect really big things from him. He had some nice wins last year, but he just really separated himself at this point. So I think that's he's great. One of the guys, when I look in the room, of a kid that's already been, you know, that I think people know is obviously a tough wrestler. He's been somebody that's really impressed me this year. So
yeah, that 141 bracket is ridiculous, though. I mean, there are, shoot, I don't know, 15, 20 guys that I think I would, you know, without looking at it, if you said, is this guy an All-American candidate? I would say, yeah, he is. And so that man,
no doubt.
Tommy's got his work cut out for him this year because that bracket is stacked.
Yeah, it's very deep. I know it's hard when you see kids at that level of seeing those guys make noticeable jumps. And I just, which has really struck out to me because I see this guy as like you mentioned, everyone talked about him last year. You know, he's beaten some good guys, but it was very deep. And so everyone knows he's great and he's All-American. So we know where he's at. But I would say I've noticed, it's been noticeable the improvement that he's made from March of last year to this fall. So we'll see.
Well, that's awesome. Well, we took up about 30 minutes of your time. I'm sure you got practice this afternoon. Is there anything else you'd like to let us know or tell us about or debate with us?
No, I think we covered most of it. I guess other things that are the only other thing that's probably coming up here is Logan Stortley will be fighting here.
Oh, yeah.
You get that big nice fight coming up November 3rd, Bellator 186. So we're excited. He's been in our room quite a bit over early fall and this summer, and it's been great having him around the guys. So he'll be fighting. They're out at Penn State at that Bryce Jordan Center. So we'll be cheering him on and watching him as well. So that's about it. Everything's going good. We're actually done with practice already.
Oh, really? You had morning practice today?
Yeah, we've changed things up a little bit. Beyond to one of the things that we talked about is we've been practicing at 10 a.m., our wrestling practice. We've wanted to do that one first. Allows our guys to get a little extra sleep before you had to lift, and our guys are waking up at like 5:30 in the morning to get in and lift. Now, this way, wrestling, which is, I mean, this is what it's all about, right? So we're doing that one first. That allows the guys, they wake up, they have breakfast, they can go to a class. Let the food digest, come at the optimal time that we feel is around 10 a.m., which, you know, even in a lot of the big tournaments, big matches, you got to be ready to go at that point. So we wrestle, and then they can grab lunch afterwards, and then they have the rest of the day to get to their classes, and we lift in the evenings. We have more flexibility with the lifting then, that if guys have classes, we can stagger a couple different times, and it's just been nice. You know, guys
so
are
when you,
getting an extra
when you say-
hour, so...
I think that's interesting, Brandon. When you say evening, is that like, you know, stagnated, but is that like, you know, 8 o'clock or is that like 5 o'clock?
They, most of them are lifting at like 4 o'clock.
Okay.
Wow. That's nice. Okay.
So they got like a 4 hour
that's cool.
break. Yeah. And if they have to come
like
in at like 5, they could, or it's nice. I mean, you think about it, the guys get at least probably an extra hour at a minimum of sleep a night, which is so important. You know, if they're getting realistically probably a couple hours of sleep, you know, over a week, that could be 2 hours a day times 5 is 10 extra hours if you're having to wake up early a few of those mornings. I mean, that's more sleep than most guys. Some guys aren't getting 5 hours of sleep a night sometimes. And so this is important, you know, I think part of the training process. And, you know, everyone's different. There's no doubt about it. But it's been something our guys have seemed to really like and enjoy, and it's working out. Well,
so that is this the first year
coaching too. This is
this the first year you're doing that?
Yeah, we've always done it in the summer, you know, time with our guys, like with the RTC practices and such. We've you know, the senior level guys have always liked going at 10 a.m. and so this is the first year we're trying it, and some things moved around on campus, so it worked out well class wise and stuff. So other programs are doing it, or other programs here in our athletic department are doing it, and so it was a good fit.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Brandon. Appreciate you coming on, and best of luck this season.
Yeah. Well, thanks, guys.
Thanks, Brandon.
Take care. Good luck with everything. We'll talk soon.
Yes, sir.
Alrighty.
We'll see
you. All right, Tommy. Well, that was fun. That was Big Ten coach, number four in a row. So maybe next week we're going for five. Is that what you're telling us?
I'm in on that. Let's give it a shot here.
Who do you think we should go to next?
Get the Rolodex out. I think you need to drive down to Iowa City and talk to Tom Brandt about coming on the podcast.
Tom's your guy.
Where you live, anyway. Tom's your guy.
All right, I'll see what I can do.
I've texted Kale twice. No,
Kale said no. So, he turned us down. Like a bad habit.
He gone. Yeah, I think maybe get Brands on. We'll think. We'll do something here.
Okay, you know, I'm sure Tony Russell would love to come on too at Purdue. One of Purdue's assistant coaches actually went to my high school, Jake Sufone, who then went to the University of Nebraska.
Arrowhead, there you go,
baby. That's maybe our connection.
Okay.
Well, all right, brother. I don't think I have anything else for you unless you got anything else for me.
You know, I think we went over U23 trials and WNO quicker than I would have liked, but I can't think of anything that we didn't at least touch on. Is there anything that you missed on that you wanted to touch on?
I agree. We could have spent a lot more time talking about both those events. We were kind of booked into that 20 minutes or so before Brandon came on. What match?
What's that?
What match did you say?
I was talking about Hoffman Beard.
Ooh, that was a good one. And that's an Ohio State guy getting the win.
Yeah, and a Penn State guy getting the loss.
Ohio State didn't give him any wins this weekend, too, because Miles Martin got whooped up by Sammy Brooks.
I know, man. I know.
I think anyways, McKenna won.
Hoffman Beard, more than,
yeah, McKenna
more than
won.
What school they're going to. Yeah, McKenna won. More than what school Hoffman and Beard are going to. I was just impressed with the level of wrestling that high school 195 pounders are at right now. I mean,
they're good.
When I think back, you know, it's just when I was watching, I was like, man, wrestling is just changing right before our eyes.
Yes. Yes. 100%.
Well, okay, man. I think we're good.
All right, Tommy, you have a great day.
You too. See ya.
You are listening to the T Row and Funky Show, and it is brought to you by Defense Soap. Defend what you've built. Tommy, I got to say, I tried these products. He shipped me a box. I love them. I've had ringworm issues for a long time. So I'm looking forward to putting these in my repertoire and hoping the ringworm does not come back ever.
No doubt, Ben. And to top that off, the company was created by wrestlers. Guy Seiko wrestled at Cleveland State University. His son was an All-American in Virginia. So these people really get it. They know what the wrestling community needs.